Welcome in, time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Hey, welcome in, time for our daily editorial. It is Monday. I hope you guys had a great weekend. It is Monday, the 27th of February. Jim, we're going to talk a little bit about where you get your information. You are probably more active in information gathering than almost anybody on the site. Why don't you take it away and explain to people?
Well, yeah, I just, you know, one of the comments from one of our regular listeners told you don't listen to me because I listen to BBC. And I want to make sure that everyone understands. I look at a wide breadth of information, including Russian, pro-Russian military bloggers.
Right.
In Russian. I look at Ukrainian information. I look at Oryx, which is a Danish group that kind of tracks all the weapons destruction. And I look at Al Jazeera, Hindustan Times, which actually is very pro-Russian. And of course, I look across the board at many, many different sources, as well as Russian language news media sources and right. Ukrainian language media sources.
Right.
So
you speak Ukrainian, Jim?
Pardon me?
Do you speak Ukrainian?
No, but it's very close, and you can certainly follow it.
Yeah, it is close to Russian, I know.
Yeah, I can get around there. I did when I was in Kiev for a while, quite a few years ago. But the point being that there is a lot of information out there, and if you close your mind off to what you know, and you're only looking at, say, you know, some of these people are posting. You've kind of missed the broader picture. And so, you know, and I want to make sure everyone understands my position on this entire war, if I can.
Yeah.
So, first of all, it should have never have happened.
No.
Had we had a stronger leader and not had the debacle in Afghanistan with the withdrawal in August of 2021, very unlikely it would have happened. So that's first. Second of all, there should have been a very coordinated effort to talk and discuss and put together policies and plans with NATO and the EU, led Biden, in order to avoid this as information came out that the Russians, that Putin was posturing for this. Yeah. And there could have been, again, a negotiated way out before it started. So those are two main points. But once I am not anti-Russian. I absolutely love the Russian people. I've spent since 1985 studying and living with them and knowing many, many Russian people. Absolutely love them. But and there's, you know, but there's some problems with the way the government is run. And that's just a reality. And the reality on the ground with this war, if you don't look at it objectively, you're going to be led down a very crazy road. And I see that happening a lot. Let's just go with Putin's stated objectives. First of all, to stop NATO. Has he done that? No. In fact, NATO is becoming more involved and closer with Ukraine. But not only that, but Finland and Sweden have applied for membership and are on the verge of becoming NATO members. That does not benefit. That certainly undermines that objective.
Yes, it does.
Has Putin changed the government or stopped Nazis in Ukraine? I mean, that's a fair question. Is it true? No, he hasn't. He has lost ground since the initial weeks of the invasion. He has strengthened and emboldened and made a much more popular government in Kyiv than what was there before. You know, a lot of people just didn't think much about Kyiv until this happened. So the reality is he didn't achieve anything about eradicating Nazis at this point at all.
Yeah.
So if you just take those two factors of a justification for a special military operation, and then you add to the specifics of has he gained ground? Is he going to be able to somehow change the government there? It's very unlikely at this point. So you got to look at it after a year and say, this is problematic for Vladimir Putin.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, his economy has not gone down the tubes like many had expected or hoped with sanctions. Sanctions are useless. They almost never work. They don't stop people from going to war.
No.
And they certainly don't stop war. We saw it in Bosnia. We saw it in Iraq. We saw it in Argentina. We saw it all around the world. It happens. It never happens. Sanctions don't work.
Well, Jimmy, we've seen the effectiveness or lack of effectiveness of sanctions for probably the last close to 9 years that we've been doing this program. We've followed a lot of events, and sanctions really, we have come to the conclusion, do not work in the long run.
That's right. They don't. And it hurts average people. You know, average Russian and of course, the war hurts the average Ukrainian, and everybody's suffering. The Ukrainian economy has just dropped probably like 30% in GDP.
Right.
They're only surviving by the influx and inflow of weapons from NATO and the U.S. and money from the United States. And here's my position on it. The EU, if they're afraid of Russian expansion, they should be the ones leading the charge here. But the United States is foolishly throwing more resources and money into it. Now, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, me too.
But I don't agree that Putin somehow should have the right to take over a sovereign nation.
No.
And if I go back to the agreements that the Russians made in 1994 through the Budapest Agreement after the Ukrainians gave up nuclear weapons, I say, you know, the Russians agreed to protect its sovereignty, and that includes Crimea and the Eastern Donbass. So that's just that; those are facts. That's not opinion. And when you look at the scenario and you look at what's happened over a year, those are facts. You know, they are losing. Russia is losing a lot of its young men.
Yeah.
And here's another problem, Alan. This is going to be, from an intelligence perspective, there's two things that happened this weekend. Anthony Lake.
Let me interrupt you just for a second. For the benefit of my friends here at Joella, when you talk about your perspective, you are a retired Army intelligence officer with years of experience. For my friends here, would you please elaborate on that?
Yeah, sure. Just so people are aware, I retired as a U.S. Army foreign area officer, focusing on Eastern Europe, Russia, and Central Asia.
Yeah.
I've spent numerous times in very bad places, all through the Balkans, through the Middle East, all through the Krapistans, if you will. And I worked in multiple embassies. I did security assistance programs in Albania and the Republic of Georgia. I traveled all through the former Soviet Union.
You bet.
And I was the deputy chief of combating terrorism for entire U.S. Pacific Command at the Joint Intelligence Operations Center. So, you know, I've got a lot of global experience, as well as being involved in special mission operations as an intelligence officer even before that, and the things I can't even really talk about. So I'm not coming to this without some vast background and knowledge in the region. And of course, I'm a Russian speaker, and I've lived and worked with many of the people there, including Russian military officers.
Yeah.
I still have friends that I would say, I won't say friends, but acquaintances that I'd, you know, that I can contact and we can talk to. And certainly in some of these countries that I served in, very important senior officials, because I worked at the very highest levels of their governments with the presidents, the prime ministers, defense ministers on a routine basis.
And I want
to
add,
it doesn't come without some experience.
I want to add something to that. Jim and I, it's almost like God brought my family closer to Jim's family, in the sense that Jimmy and his family were neighbors of mine when Kathy and I lived up in Semiahmoo. We have gotten to know each other for quite some time. We've known each other for 4 or 5 years, and he was a natural fit to come into this particular radio program because, number one, because of his ability, because of his experience, and because of his desire to really express the true story of what's going on in politics around the world. Very good guy. I love him like a brother. Thanks, Jim. Go ahead.
You bet. So let's talk about two specific things that happened over this weekend that I think are probably relevant to the overall, you know, issue. One is Anthony Lake, the director of the CIA, came out and admitted that there's sharing intelligence with Ukraine. Well, that's been an ongoing intelligence sharing relationship for a long period of time. That's nothing new. But I will tell you, the ability to provide the Ukraine forces with specific targeting information and massing of Russian troops gives a significant advantage to Ukrainian forces.
You
makes it very challenging.
You bet it is.
Well, and you can see on the ground, because over the last few weeks, the Russians had moved a lot of troops and a lot of equipment to push an offensive in the eastern Donbass area, and they have basically been stifled in almost each of those major areas that they were pushing. They made some very small gains in a few villages and hamlets, but other than that, they've actually been pushed back. And that's primarily because of specific targeting with solid intelligence, and which is probably shared from NATO members countries through very specific technical means. And the other reason is because of very sophisticated targeting weapon systems, the Excalibur 155 round. They can go directly to a target. They're not shooting in a broad area. They will hit an armored vehicle very specifically with one round. And there's a numerous array of weapon systems that have been provided from the West that are vastly superior to what the Russian forces have, which is why they're able to do so much destruction to their Russian armored formations. And that's just a reality. That's happening. The other significant thing that happened, Al, this weekend is there was a IL-76-based A-50, Bury of A-50. That's what NATO calls a mainstay. That's basically like a kind of like an AWACS plane for the Russian military forces.
Surveillance, you bet.
It's a surveillance plane that does a lot of very sophisticated technical surveillance. If you read a book about Chechnya in a book called Calamity in the Caucasus, it talks about how the Russian forces were able to specifically target and kill the Chechen leader with a mainstay aircraft. I won't go into any more detail, too much detail, but basically they can target you off your cell phone. There's all kinds of specific ways to do it. The Russians have less than a dozen of these aircraft that are flyable. They also have obligations for surveillance in many areas in the Far East, up in the north, along the, you know, in the Baltic areas. They have them down in Syria, supporting operations in Syria, and of course in the Black Sea and around the combat zone there. An A-50 mainstay in Belarus, or what, you know, this aircraft was apparently targeted by, according to media sources, partisan activists inside Belarus at an airfield there, and destroyed it or made it inoperable. Now, what that means is when you look at the ability of the Russians to provide intelligence to their people in order to target, they are spread out very thin with these type of aircraft, and then probably the key one that's providing support into the region, probably one or two that are providing support to this operation, just because they don't have a large number of them.
Right.
One of them has now been mission ineffective. And I would say that will be very problematic for Russian forces to be able to backfill that. And, of course, they will probably backfill it. They'll have to pull something from somewhere else, but it'll leave a gap in intelligence in other areas. So, to me, this was a very sophisticated targeting operation. I don't know who did it, but the fact that some Belarusian partisans did it, I would be questioning that. I would think that there would probably be some more information behind the story of what went on and to target this aircraft. Very specific target, very influential target, something that has an impact on the battlefield today and for the next few weeks.
Yeah. I would want to say one thing about my feelings, by the way, about Russia getting involved in Ukraine. On the surface, it would appear that that was a very immoral thing for Vladimir Putin to do, in the sense that he just decided to go in and take over a sovereign country that was on his border. But the one thing that I think that listeners have to be aware of is Putin and many Russians are very, very concerned about the negative influence that the West is shooting the way of the Russians. Putin really doesn't like that. And he feels that the NATO is really behind a lot of this negative influence. And that's why he is so concerned about Ukraine joining NATO and of course, some of the Scandinavian countries. Do I agree with them? Well, listen, I'm an American, and of course I don't agree with them. But the fact of the matter is, that is his rationale. Is he going to be successful? My personal opinion is I don't think so. Number one, the philosophy of the world outside of Russia is going in such a way they are very, very anti this particular action. Look at what the United States is doing in terms of supporting Ukraine. Very, very interesting. And more countries are coming in, jumping in, so to speak, and also not supporting Russia and supporting Ukraine. But it's important to realize that probably, and you might give me a comment on this one, Jim, I would say from my examination of this particular situation, most of the Russian people seem to be very, very aligned with Vladimir Putin. What do you think about that, Jim?
Well, I say you don't really have a choice, and it's really hard to judge.
Right, it is.
I think with the more casualties they have, the less support they'll have. I think the justifications are not holding up water over time.
No.
So, you know, and this fear of NATO is really the fear of westernization. And I understand, you know, kind of the liberal ideologies that they're concerned about, that, you know, there's a lot of things out there that we don't agree with here. And I can support, you know, those being against those types of philosophies.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, NATO, one's partners with NATO in the what they call Partnership for Peace, Russians were. This has happened over the years where they've gone back and forth kind of pushing towards westernization or against westernization. But ultimately, when you have a single leader and a small group of people that control a nation, they're going to be protecting their interest, and their financial interests are massive.
You bet they
are. This had a lot more to do with fear being overtaken by popular opinion or expansion of, in my view, expansion of liberal democracy and liberal democratic ideals, mm-hmm. and him pushing back against that than any real aversion to morality in the West. Because Russia, after living there, being there, there's a lot of moral questions about what happens in Moscow, I will tell you straight up, especially with the leadership. And that's from personal experience. So I would say, you know, it's really more about power. It's about protecting one's interests in a very small group of people, trying to convince others that this is the right course of action. And unfortunately, like here in the United States, people just, like sheeple, just follow along with whatever the government says. Mm-hmm. The unfortunate reality is there they do the same thing. The one difference right now, which is that difference is diminishing. If you go against the government in Russia, you're guaranteed to go to jail. Here, if you go against the government, you're not guaranteed, but it's a good chance. So we'll see how this works out over time. But the reality is it's going to be very difficult for him, for Putin and Russia, to overcome the cost of this war.
Yeah.
And at this point, I've said it before, regardless of what you believe and what the Durant and some of these other people say, you know, the Ukrainian army didn't collapse. You know,
no, I've heard it sure didn't.
McGregor, I heard these guys say this over and over again. I hear these arguments continually about this is going to happen, that's going to happen, and it doesn't happen. And in fact, the Ukrainians still are surviving because they're fighting for their own lives. And they look at this as their sovereignty.
Yeah.
And they're willing to do it. And as long as someone's giving them funding and resources, then they're going to continue to fight. And it's just a sad, sad circumstance and sad situation. And there should be some other options.
Yeah, they really should. You know, I have been asked numerous times, Jimmy, since I moved into La Jolla here, which I really happen to love the environment here. I love the people. But I've been asked about the program. People have said, well, are you conservative or are you liberal in the message of your radio show? And I have to say one thing. Jim and I are very, very, in one sense, conservative, but in the other sense, we are very, very, what's the best way to put it, Jimmy? I guess I would say we look at every particular situation that we discuss, and we look at both sides of every story, and that's what we present. I don't really want to argue with anybody about, am I right, is Jim right, or are the listeners right? I would say if you're just informed about situations that are going on, you are ahead of 90% of the population of the world. And that's the only thing that we're doing. We're not pushing liberalism or conservatism. We are specifically pushing clear thinking.
Well, that's my goal of why I've been joining you on this for so long is
been a long time.
I'm providing information, you know, if as I see it, and of course all of us have our biases, but I have a little more experience in some of these things than most other Americans. So it would be wrong of me not to share my view or experience in my view. So
but there is no point in letting emotion rule your communication.
No, and we're not really about I don't want to argue, and I don't want to alienate. It shouldn't be about conservative or liberal, Republican or Democrat. It should be about what's the information and make decisions based on the information.
I agree.
100%. None of us have the whole story.
No, I agree 100%.
So open your mind and keep looking. That's how I started this segment.
And we'll take all the comments on our blog that you would like. We try to address every single one. And I want to say that my new friend up here, Sonny, is responsible for all the background information that I'm giving you on this particular daily editorial about Jimmy. Now you know my relationship with Jim. Now you know why I consider him to be like a member of the family in a brotherly sense. Ask any questions you want through the blog. Jim, thanks for taking the time, bud.
You bet, Al.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.